Hello, and welcome to the Well Collab Feminine Leadership Podcast. I am Tammy Zadunik, founder of the Well Collab and your host for today. Our podcast features feminine leadership principles and women leading both in their professional and personal lives. Let's get started. I'm here today with my dear friend, Mona, who I met through the Well back in 2018.
Summer of 2018.
And we have never recorded a podcast together.
No, we haven't.
How have you not been on? How has this not happened? It's so weird.
We just have too much time to talk to each other.
Yeah,
not enough time to be on a podcast.
We don't even have enough time just to catch up.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, but when we do, it's just like, let's keep talking for 5 hours.
Yeah. Because I think like when I first met you, I remember like hugging.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. That was after the Coffee and Connection. Right after, I think.
What was it? Like, what do you think it was? Like, why were we so in love with each other immediately?
Well,
that's how I felt.
This is the story I tell everybody who's new at the Well is A, that I'm OG, one of the OG Well members.
Yeah.
Tis 2018. And again, looking for just somewhere to network, somewhere to get out of. Because I had just moved to Saskatoon a year before in 2017. To Canada, really, and still trying to find my feet, trying to find some sort of purpose, I guess, and found the Well through a discovery call, which I've told you about
with Greer.
Yeah. And came to Coffee and Connection, sat in the parking lot. Remember, I tell you this every time.
I know, but everyone needs to hear because it's so.
So I sat in the parking lot because at the time, the Well's website was very, very, very white.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure
and
still is. Sure, we're trying.
No, there's been a lot of change over the years. But at that time, I was sat in the parking lot. I was just like, what am I going to talk to a bunch of white women about? I have no idea. Not that I found it uncomfortable. I'd been around white people my whole life, growing up in Dubai and growing up in a very diverse community. But yeah, Canada was a new place, new ball game.
Were you wondering almost, are you going to be able to relate on anything?
Yeah, that was a big part of it. I think I was more concerned about whether the people I'm talking to would be able to relate to me.
Yeah, and would they accept you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Accept is a difficult word for me because I don't have a problem with feeling accepted in spaces. Mm-hmm. Like I come in and take my space, and sure, this is who I am. Like, I don't compromise on that to be accepted in spaces, but definitely, well, this is, again, I mean, it's funny that we're talking about this now after all these years when, can I say?
Yeah, whatever.
Okay.
Say anything you're comfortable saying.
We're talking about this now that this year Trump's been reelected as president. And when we had moved here, that was in 2017, and he had just been elected as president. And so it was an interesting time to be in North America. And I'd never been in North America from ever before. I'd been in Europe, but not in North America. And so I wasn't sure, because we grew up very much with American culture. So I wasn't sure how different that was from the Canadian culture.
I hope it's different.
It is, my understanding. My feeling was for sure. Felt a lot more accepting and welcoming and went to Coffee and Connection, and we just connected as women.
Yeah, as people. Like, as
right?
Women, yeah.
That was the biggest thing, is that we just sat there and we talked, and everybody realized, yeah, we're all just women.
Yeah, like, it's very human to human.
Yes.
But I'm going to say, like, that's not an experience that you would get anywhere in Saskatoon.
I agree.
That I've been in environments where I feel very unaccepted and not able to be myself. And, oh, and this is, I do want to talk about this, though, so... Why are you able to just take up space and not concern yourself with being accepted?
I think part of it is the way that I was brought up. My parents brought us up to have a very strong identity of being who we are, where we're from, what we believe in as Muslims. And like, there was just never, that was just something that you could never compromise on, right? Wherever you went, that's who you showed up as first.
Take it or leave it.
Take it or leave it. And so then And this is, I get this more from my dad, from my mom too, but more from my dad, where he was just like, if you know that you're being truthful in life, you've got nothing on your conscience, you have nothing to be sorry about. And that's just who you are.
Yeah, I find it really interesting that I know your parents. I love your parents. Your parents are so kind to me. And I think what really was interesting for me was recently we were in the art show together at the 525. And the way that your parents, I can't even with them, I love them so much, not only accepted and embraced me years ago, but also recently, I was nervous about them seeing my art.
Yeah.
I was nervous about my parents seeing my art. And I felt like your parents somehow made it okay for me and for my parents. So I think this is what I find interesting is not only were you taught to accept yourself and show up as you are, you also are very accepting of other people and our cultures.
Because as human beings, I feel we do it, and I'm guilty of this as much as anyone else. We judge.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But in the same token, we have no right to, right? We're nobody's judges. Like my parents always brought us up with this saying of, when you point a finger at someone else, there are three others pointing at you, pointing right back at you. So look internally first,
right?
Before you judge someone. And is this like when you're judging somebody, or even if it's silently, or even if it's just with your eyes between two people, right?
They feel it too.
Like, why are you doing it? Like, what is it about you that's making you judge that person?
Sometimes you judge someone else, it's really about yourself.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it's so amazing how authentic the acceptance is your family has for themselves, each other, and others.
Yeah.
And that saying, you can only love, you have first love yourself, and then you can love others. Or you have to accept love for you, that God loves you, before you can accept others would be another. Like, we definitely connect on a spiritual level.
Yes.
Even though we have two, I don't think, completely different religions, but what
I don't either
would see as completely different faiths. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel the faith is the same. It's different practices.
Yeah.
That's how I like to look at it. Yeah. And that's, I mean, part of that connection and that authenticity was what I found at the well too, even though there wasn't a faith aspect to it at all. Which I feel that's why the women at the well are a very specific niche group of women.
You're niche.
Because not everybody wants to be that open and honest and vulnerable. And that makes, I've seen over the years at different Coffee and Connections, people who've come in for the first time, people have come in looking or thinking that this is something that'll benefit them from a business perspective. And when they sit there and it's just real women talking about actual real things, and it hits them like a ton of bricks, and you can see it in their face how uncomfortable they're getting from woman to woman as we pass, you know,
closer to them.
Yeah.
Their turn to share.
Yeah. And usually like what they share is really short and it's like, let's move on. It's interesting.
They may come back or they may never come back.
Yeah.
And that's totally fine. But it is interesting. Sometimes I can't predict, like I'll have a woman will come and I'll be like, oh, she's not coming back. Like, this was like not her jam. And then she'll come back or she'll commit and she'll keep coming.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, she wants this. She needs this.
Yeah.
I think the women at the well are almost the women who have had some struggle in life.
Mm-hmm.
They've been through something. We've all been through something, but they've been through something that they've been able to acknowledge and go, oh, that was hard. And then they're willing to come to the table.
Yeah,
it was hard. I survived. So...
yeah,
I can do this. Like, they have that strength of character or something. Like, they're such an interesting breed, aren't we?
And then 9 times out of 10, as we go down the circle in during Coffee and Connection, or any of the other events, to be honest, and it's like that moment that'll click, that aha moment where, oh, this woman's been through the exact same thing as me.
Yeah.
This woman's been, you know, and that's how she handled it. This is how I'm handling it, or whatever. And you can see, it's always interesting to me after we finish Coffee and Connection, who the women are who get up to hug each other.
Yeah.
I always love seeing that because like it's part of like the closing off of that conversation.
And something like that's interesting to note for anyone who hasn't been to Coffee and Connection is we really try to practice, and it's hard for all of us. So it's a practice, not interrupting, not fixing, not offering advice. And I think that's really hard for women. We really want to help. We're helpers naturally. But when you've sat and listened and taken everything in for an hour and a half, everyone's taken a turn. And then afterwards, like, I feel like I truly love everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think I truly love everyone in the world, but really when we're around that table, I feel like a closeness to the women from their open sharing. I feel like I just know you. Like, I would hug you anywhere I saw you.
Yeah.
Like, you are like a kindred, like, we have like a soul connection after it.
Yeah. It's so funny because when I first joined The Well and we started going Coffee and Connection, saw all these women, and then they were like regulars and stuff. And I would be in the city. And at that time, because it was so early on in my journey in Saskatoon, I didn't realize how small Saskatoon was, because I came from a really big city, and so never realized how small Saskatoon was. And I would see the Well women like around the city, and I'd be like, oh, I know her, like, I want to go up to her and give her a little hug.
You're so connected to the people from the way that we share.
Yeah, and I was just like, these people aren't gonna think I'm super weird.
No, they're gonna like, or you'd be like, hey, I met you, and then they would catch on.
Yeah,
because it is like a different, you are seeing someone in a different location, which is a little bit weird. But I realized we jumped right into The Well and sharing, which I'm so glad. But I would love for you to introduce a little bit more about yourself. People know where you come from, but what is a little bit about yourself?
Your
interests, your family, your identity, like just a little bit. Yeah.
So I am ethnically from Pakistan. And from Yemen. My dad is half Yemeni, so I always like to acknowledge that part of my heritage. And I grew up in the United Arab Emirates my entire life, went to design school and university over there, lived for 4 years and a half in Pakistan after marriage, had two of my daughters there, moved back to the UAE for about 7 years, then moved to Canada and came to Saskatoon, which I love to say, in January of 2017, when it was minus 33 degrees the night we landed, which was a shock to the system, to say the least. And I now have three daughters. So one of them was born in the UAE. I have one daughter's at university, one daughter's graduating high school, the other one's grade five. And yeah, I'm a very dedicated Muslim from the Ahmadiyya Muslim community. So if you're listening to this from Saskatoon, it's the mosque that you see on your way to Costco in the south. That's the one we're from. I have a degree in visual communication and didn't do much about it for a whole lot of years. Moved to Canada and then realized that I want to pick up a camera again, thanks to Miss Tammy right here. Didn't look back. And Tammy, you've helped me find my niche, which was photographing anyone who's lived over 70 or 75 years. I was looking at the first photographs that I took, and the ugly cry that happened afterwards. Do you remember that day? I keep thinking to myself, like, just how much, like, you've helped me grow in the last few years. And just finding myself, I work as a producer for a branding studio in Saskatoon, and just a day-to-day work, kids, trying to be an artist.
Trying to find time to be creative.
Yeah.
I think the good thing is, you do really know what you love to shoot, what you're gonna, what makes you cry. Oh my goodness. It's like you're so, like, you have such sensitivity when you're capturing what you love.
Yeah.
Like, you capture it, and then there's so much feeling inside of you. I love it so much. It's so meant to be.
Yeah, but I think we saw that, like, when we did our art show, right? We were all dealing with the same themes. The artwork was so diverse, but you could see that passion or that depth of feeling for every single artist and their piece. Like, your pieces were so diversely different from mine. Like, they were just night and day.
Yeah.
But still, like, you could see that passion and that, like, in every single one of those photographs. And I think that's the beauty of being an artist, being a creative, is even if it's so different from your work, you can still connect to it immediately because you see how much it means to the artist and where it's coming from.
Yeah, it was interesting even how everyone sort of identified with the theme and topic the same way or could talk about it the same way, mm-hmm. but the expression of it was completely different.
Yeah.
We could all really relate to one another's art, but the way that we envision it and yes. express it, that's like the coolest thing. I felt like the 525 was so accepting, like just invited us in a safe space to just create whatever we wanted.
Yeah.
They just cheered us on.
Yeah. I've always ever looked at my skills, like my photography skills or anything else creative related, is as a means to an end. Like it's always related to producing something commercial or something like that. Because that's when we were doing our degrees, like that's sort of what it was. Like it was more design related and more, you know, agency related or whatever. And this was the first time that I was forced to look at my work and my collections as art and like what that means and how does that translate. And it was a very interesting, like when I was going through my photos and my portfolios and stuff and thinking about the project, it was a very different sort of mindset that I needed to put myself in.
Yeah. Well, we don't always get to do something just for us. It's like rare.
Yeah.
I think unless you're a full-time artist, but even if you're a full-time artist, you're still producing for what will sell.
Yes.
If you are producing and you need to make a living off of it, then it matters. Mm-hmm. But when you're in an art show and you're able to do it just solely for your own, the art for the sake of art,
mm-hmm.
that's such a different experience. I need so much more of that in my life.
I agree. Yeah. I feel, especially now, some of the things that I got to thinking during the 525 show and afterwards also was, it's so hard now to be a photographer with everything that's blows up on social media, now with AI and like all of those things, to be a true photography artist, or like it's very, very hard.
Yeah.
Like when I think back to like people that I look up to, like in photography, like Steve McCurry is one of my favorite photographers, but like he photographed people like around the world on film, and like there were so many different things, and everything wasn't on social media. Everybody did not have a camera, which was so brilliant, in their pockets.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. Yeah, I think there's pressure now to constantly be posting art all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not how artists function. We don't function always on a high. We go down and we have to rest and we have to like renew our creative spirit and then come up the other side with
yeah.
new energy and new inspiration. And then we birth it, we deliver, and then mm-hmm. we have to hide.
Yeah.
Almost hide at rest. You cannot be consistently posting art.
Yeah.
And that's what we're told to do, like by social media, which I don't buy into that at all. But that is what it expects from us, because that's what we're seeing other people are doing. And I don't know if it's, I don't know if it really is true art if you're posting it every day.
I agree.
I just don't think you can. I don't know how anyone would have the time unless like there was just them.
Mm-hmm. I'm not at all sold on the post this many times a day and this many reels a week and this many. That's the, like, now hashtags are out and they were in before, right? Like, yeah.
Also, the other day they were out. I was hoping I was right. I was like, hashtag.
Yeah. So before you posted square content and now you don't. And it's like, it's,
yeah.
yeah. And I remember having a conversation in one of the Coffee and Connections with a lady, and we were talking about Instagram, and we were talking about the pressure of feeling everybody else's life is perfect on social media and all of that. And I said to them, I said, when I first joined Instagram, it was purely visual for me. Like, I just wanted beautiful visuals on my phone when I opened up that app.
Yeah.
And I still think of it that way.
Me too. I do too. It's because we're
yeah. Yeah. And like, I don't want to see a million other people doing things which look like they're doing things better than me. And they have that, like we were talking earlier about the work-life balance, like it looks like everything is so perfect, and like, no, it's not. You yeah. do have a room in that beautiful curated house of yours, which is full of all of the junk you've thrown in there.
Like Mona, it's so funny. We came into my little basement to record this podcast, And I have my desk down here. And just to explain the room, it's like a very small portion is my desk where I can work. I have like magazines and just kind of some junk and some pretty pictures and stuff around me. Then behind me, I have like my new closet that I posted on Instagram that my husband and I built for me because I need to be able to buy more clothes. Like I'm out of space. So my closet is actually in my basement. And then just to the right is the pool table.
Yeah.
Where my kids, the teenagers and my husband and I play pool. And then there's the gaming area. And like, this is not an amazing house with closet. Like, this is a beautiful house that serves us. But I said to Mona, I said, yeah, I'm going to start doing like outfit of the days in front of this closet that everyone thinks when you see it on social, it's like this big closet in like, this private room. I'm like, no, it's like literally in my kids' hangout area.
And that's exactly what social media is. I feel we need to stop. And by we, I mean like especially every woman and girl out there.
Yeah.
We need to stop looking for validation on social media. Like we need to really teach the next generation, like it doesn't matter.
Like, and what like, does that even mean? Like what, tell me more about the validation. Like, is it like?
Yeah.
Like what even is that?
Like. And it goes back to that identity piece and building really strong identities for ourselves, for our kids, so that we're not looking for those likes and the numbers and like that. That's really hard. It's very hard work.
It's so hard for the kids now.
Yeah.
Because their brains are developing with this idea that quick, you know, gratification is what the brain needs and wants, and that dopamine addiction and high, like to be happy. And we grew up with very slow paced life, you know, hits of dopamine were a bit more few and far between.
And accolades really meant something.
And we were
really
growing up.
Something.
Oh my goodness. And then my parents would say, oh, so-and-so said, you know, you're such a good dancer, but don't let it go to your head.
Yeah.
Like really, like we wanted to limit the compliment.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, compliments are great as long as they're really genuine. Like you know, if my kids put like dishes away into the dishwasher, I'm not going to give them a medal for it. Like it's, you live in this house, you're old enough. You, like I always say, if you can operate an iPad, you can operate the washing machine or the dishwasher.
100%.
And so like, I feel like they don't need a medal for that.
No.
Right? Like, you just do it. I teach you how to do it the right way because there is a way that mom fills the dishwasher and that's the right way.
And that's the way we're
that's
do it.
Only way that you're going to do it. And, but again, like, you don't need like 500 likes for filling up the dishwasher, which is like, or organizing your fridge. It's like,
yeah.
Come on, people.
Yeah, that's just things you just need to do.
Yeah.
You just need to do those things.
And you don't need 5 million clear boxes to organize your fridge.
Like, you don't.
Right.
No.
As much as, I mean,
it looks pretty.
If people like that, that's, and it's their jam, that's fine.
Yeah,
but you know, like what I'm saying is like, it's like, why are we living day to day in our lives for recording something on a screen that people you're never going to meet are going to look at?
And in quotes, validate you.
Yeah, and validate you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting because if I think of your identity and what is your identity rooted in? So I feel like people are actually identifying with their profile on social media and thinking that that's their identity.
Mm-hmm.
Like when they have their profile on, let's say, Instagram and you can see all the images and it's how it's laid out is like their identity. It's external instead of internal.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a very external identity time right now.
Yeah.
You know, even if you think of, and we're not going to get a lot into this topic, neither of us are experts on it, but gender and looks wise and how you're identifying, if that's an external, then that's not actually identity. Identity is fully internal.
Yeah.
So even when we think about, like, I think lots about identity. For me, identity is like being a child of God, being a spiritual being in a human body. Like my identity is nothing to do with my skin color.
Yeah.
But I do think that culture and how you're raised does play into your identity.
Oh, of course. 100%. I mean, there's so many facets to a person's identity. Like there's a million different parts to a person and what affects you. I'm not the same person that I was in my 20s. My identity as a 20-year-old who had just graduated from university and was getting married, moving to a new country, was very different from who I am today in my 40s as a mom of teenagers, or, you know, like, it's a completely different person. But I feel like it's, like you're saying, the external has become, like, and we always talk about this at the Well, too, like, it's so hard to sit with yourself in a quiet room and just be yourself, like, be you.
Okay, but I'm just going to say, when you're in your 40s, that's all you want.
That's right.
All you want is to sit in a quiet room or maybe in a forest.
Yes.
And just lay in the ground and be yourself with no one around.
With nobody around you.
Actually, what I thought now. But yes, I agree. It's really hard for, like, 20s, 30s. I feel like, 30s maybe, to just sit with yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've seen, honestly, people with children on social media, and it's like, they will validate their children in front of the camera, but behind it, right as soon as they switch it off, it's like,
it's for the show.
It's for the show. And so, I mean, I always compare it to, like, pageant moms. I feel like everybody's a pageant mom now, right? Especially if you have your children on social media, like, that's a whole other, it's scary.
I'm big too. Like, I, when I first got on social media, it was like 2009, I think, on Facebook. And maybe a little earlier, maybe it was 2007 when my oldest was born. And I have pictures of him on there. And when my kids were little, I would share pictures. And I feel very bad now that I did that. I actually feel that without their consent, I should not be posting images of them on social media. So, not to shame anyone who does that, I just think I wish I wouldn't have.
Yeah.
And I wish I would have known to not do that. I now ask consent. And if they consent, so there are pictures on my social media of my kids, but they have to consent for it.
Yeah.
Or we're at a public event where their photo will be taken.
Yeah.
Like with 525, the photos of my family. And my husband actually has been very open about not wanting to be on my social media.
Mm-hmm.
So I will ask him if it's our anniversary for permission. But it's just really interesting that I didn't get consent from my kids, and I just thought there was this whole new platform and I could just do whatever I wanted.
Mm-hmm. Again, in 2007, though, social media was a completely different thing than what it is today.
It was totally different.
Right? There wasn't this whole other layer of how dangerous it is to put your children on social media, and, like, so many other layers to it, and what it means to them and how it's affecting their brains. And there's, like, God, the studies that are being done now, and that this was when nobody had any studies or any information, and we were just like, oh, this is a fun way to share something about my life with some friends. And that's all it started
with.
It was
really friends and family at that time.
Yeah.
Or now it's really more of a commercial marketing
platform. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like a get on, get off girl.
Yeah.
I say that all the time. My friends are like, people will be like, oh, you probably didn't see my posts. I'm like, no, I don't see anyone's posts. I just get on.
Yeah.
And I get off. Because for me, it's work.
Yeah. And I also, before, when I first started with you and we were talking about my photography and, like, putting it out there and all of that, I started doing it. And then the stress of figuring it out, like, when we were trying to talk about work-life balance, I'd started a job and I was dealing with my kids and I was dealing with, you know, my parents live here and I've, like, got to take care of them sometimes. And it's like dealing with all of that and then also thinking about posting every day. And I was just like, I really couldn't care less, you know, like, and so this last year, especially during the winter holidays after our show, I was thinking about, I only did 2 shoots last year, like 2 actual paid shoots,
sure.
Right? However, I still see that as massive growth because that led me to doing an art show. Like, there's still growth. It's slow, but that pace suits me. Like, it suits my life right now. And I don't need it to be any faster or any more pressure than that, right?
Yeah, I really don't believe in doing things the way people tell you to do them. Like, I really believe in, like, doing it your way. And anytime I mentor or coach or teach or at the Well, it's like, does that work for you?
Mm-hmm.
There's not one way to do something. If you do that, is that going to work for you? And if your body is telling you, not post, this feels awful, then don't post.
Don't post.
And if you need to post for your business, which I think actually very few really actually need to, then you might have to figure that out or maybe do something different.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure I just don't think that it's obviously not aligning with your values if you're feeling that way. So then there's other ways to market. This is such an interesting thing, too. We both work in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many ways to market. You don't have to do social media.
Yeah.
I actually, like, I'm really loving it right now.
Because at the end of the day, for any business, regardless of what industry you're in, it depends on who you're talking to, right? Who are you meeting? Who are you creating those connections with? And that will organically lead to more business for you or for them. And it's not necessarily, because every like that you get is not translating into a sale. And people who tell you that they can teach you how to do it in 10 days and buy their $10,000 course, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, they're just selling marketing.
Yeah.
Like they're essentially not selling you to have, they're not teaching you how to have sales. They're just marketing to you and telling you something. And then whether or not you get the results really doesn't matter because they've been paid. Or they're teaching you how to duplicate the business that they're.
I mean, I'm not a big, huge businesswoman and I don't have like, you know, tons of money coming in or whatever. I have a 9-to-5.
A full-time job.
Yeah, I have a 9-to-5, but it's, and even from that, I've seen like it's, yes, social media creates like a little buzz. It creates people talking about you. It keeps you at the top of people's minds.
Sure. Yeah, that's a job to do.
And that is important, but I feel like we put so much emphasis on how important it is.
Yeah.
For people to grow or for a business to grow or for, like we're saying, like the validation part. Whether it's for your business or for yourself, I think we just put way too much emphasis on it because that's what we're sort of being programmed to think, right? We are the product. So,
yeah, we need to get away from that a little bit. I hope that that does turn the corner in a sense.
Yeah.
I really think it's just who you know, your networks, your people.
Yeah.
Word of mouth.
Yeah, we were just talking about it at work this afternoon. It's like my boss says this thing when he does all of the trainings that they do for businesses and stuff, like your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
And I love that because it's like, that's really what it is.
It is, because when you put something out on social media that you're excited about, the people who you've actually been engaging with lately or who have been in your network, those are the people who buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move away from that dreaded social media for a while. I have another TikTok.
Yes.
You got one?
Sure.
Tell me a little bit about this work-life balance. We thought we would talk a little bit about that today because you have 3 kids, mm-hmm. husband, parents, and I love how you say when you moved here, it was so foreign to you that people don't take care of their parents.
Oh, God, yeah.
Parents.
Yeah. It's the strangest thing because culturally, especially in the East, it's very, very normal to live in a home with elderly parents. And it's a given. Like, it's very rare that you would, like, parents would live separately or they would live in a retirement home or, like, hospice care if they're, like, at that point of their lives. And so it blew my mind. Like, I went to Market Mall and it was I wanted to sit there. No, but I wanted to sit there and cry because it made me so sad that all of these people, especially, like, people who were like really, really like elderly had to do their own grocery shopping and stuff.
It's so like, interesting because I have talked to my parents about it. I'll make you a place over the garage. You know, I'll do this. You can come live here. We do not want to live with you. We don't want to burden you.
Yeah.
That is the narrative. Like all of our, if I can think of all 3 families that are like my husband has the 2 sets, mm-hmm. you know, parents from divorced family and then my parents. They're like, no, wait, we don't want to do that to you.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Or we want to move into like a group home. Why?
Yeah. See, whereas for us, culturally, religiously, it's just an accepted part of your life is that your parents have given you everything. Yeah. And that's the least that you can do. Is to take care of them. It's like the least that you can do. And it's, yeah, it's...
Do they still feel like independent living and independent in terms of like choices, like what they want to do in the evening or what they do?
Oh, yeah.
Do you still feel like that?
Oh, yeah. 100%. So my parents and I,
how do you ever have hard enough with kids? Okay. You don't have to answer that.
You give them your five. Or you send them out for dinner. For
Take the kids. You could all go out for dinner.
Yeah, it's giving each other that respect and privacy and space as well. We all used to live in the same house.
Okay, yeah.
And it's hard to explain because it's everybody gets their space, everybody gets their independence. The biggest piece of that, though, is the financial independence. I think it gets very complicated when your parents become financially dependent on you. That's a lot more complicated.
Does that happen commonly?
It does, culturally, because once your father retires or like, and a lot of times, like back home in Pakistan, women have been homemakers instead of having full-time careers. And so the women have always been dependent on their husbands. Husband retires or the father retires, and then they're dependent on their son to take care of them financially too. After having spent on everyone's weddings and all of that stuff, like, you know, getting all of their children settled, that's where it gets really complicated, I feel. Like with my parents, it's totally different. They're completely financially independent and, you know, they're very adamant about those things. Like even when we were living in the same home, we were living in like a rented space. So they were making sure they're like, we're going to pay half the utilities, half the rent. Like everything was split between us evenly.
But how amazing to have that when you're trying to raise a family and to not have full costs that you have to.
Oh, and like being newly settling in a brand new country, it was brilliant because we had that support from them. If, you know, if Imran and I wanted to go out for dinner, like, we had free babysitters. Not that I needed babysitters, but
it sounds great. Yeah. A lot of ways. It really does.
But it's, that. Yeah.
How do you decide who they're going to live with? Like if you have three kids.
Yeah.
How does that work? Because like, I think I'd want to take like my parents in. That would be the most comfortable for me.
Mm-hmm.
But like Scott has two sets of parents. So how do you do that?
It depends culturally. Like it's a lot of it. So like back home in Pakistan, it's, and this is like in the subcontinent in general, it's the husband's parents are the ones that you sort of live with or take care of, or they live with you.
Is it the oldest? So like Adam could take like Scott's parents?
Yeah, maybe. It could be, it depends on the family. Sometimes it's the youngest. Like in our village and stuff, it's usually the youngest son who will get the father's house, but then also has to take care of the father.
Okay. I just find this so fascinating. I think it would be so great in North America and just to open our minds to the idea of what that could look like.
Yeah.
Just be curious about it. Think, what would that look like if I did that?
Because even if you look at it from the Western lens, I feel 9 times out of 10, there will be one sibling who is more inclined towards taking care of the parents and the other one just sort of comes at the special occasions and stuff.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah,
right?
Makes sense to me. Yeah, that's harder with divorce.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden you could have, like, let's say two people get married and their parents are both divorced. Now you have four parents and let's say they're only children.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my goodness, we have like two sets of parents who are like left out in the dust.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is.
Just a thought.
Yeah, it does get complicated.
But life is complicated.
Yes. And then I think it would be culturally for us, it would be the mom who comes first. Always the mother who comes first.
Yeah.
Because if your parents are divorced and your father has remarried, he's still got some companionship or he's got something in his life. Say if your mom hasn't remarried, which for us culturally is a lot of times the norm, is that the women don't remarry. Yeah. And because they want to take care of the kids and they want to be there for their children. So then they would be the primary ones that you would take care of.
Okay, so then now I need to move on to something we weren't going to talk about. So maybe we'll come back to work-life balance. But this is what I want to know. What then do you think about, because lots of times we talk about equity of feminine and masculine leadership at every table. So equity of leadership, not meaning equal number of men and women, but that we have a feminine and masculine energy, like in, because I hold both. Everyone holds both. But people, I think as women, we have to lean into our masculine a lot to function in culture and corporate in this country.
Mm-hmm.
So then how do you feel about equity of not gender, but like leadership skills?
Okay, so my take on this is maybe I wouldn't say controversial, but it is very different from the Western thinking.
I'm so excited.
Okay. So for me personally, it's very much rooted in faith. Okay. Spiritually, in Islam, men and women are created completely equal.
Equal.
It's an absolute equal playing ground, whoever gets to God first. Right?
I love that.
Right? So if your husband prays 5 times a day and does all of the Ramadan stuff and all of that, and you do it too, it's an equal race to God. Like it, right? There's absolutely nothing stopping women or men to reach that spiritual level.
Yeah.
In the physical world, mm-hmm. we are absolutely equal, mm-hmm. but we have different roles.
Yeah. I mean, that's where, like, honestly, like, that's where I land. Mm-hmm. But I think where I feel that we should, I feel that there should be more agency, might be the right word, or autonomy in deciding for ourselves what that role is.
Yeah.
Only because I'm very masculine and I really like to run business and I really like to work. And my husband would, like, honestly rather be the one with the kids at home.
Mm-hmm.
And that just would work better for us. But we don't do that because the corporate world is not built that way.
Yeah.
So we actually can't do that because that's not the way society functions here. So I do, I mean, it might at some point, but I do find it even interesting sometimes for myself. Like, I just want the feminine values to be able to be in government, religion.
Yeah.
Corporate. And I think God does too.
Yeah.
But I think culture and I like how you separate the spiritual from the physical.
Yeah.
I think the physical world has.
Yeah. The physical world. I mean, for me as a Muslim woman, I am given a specific purpose in life, right?
Yeah.
This is what I feel as a Muslim woman. God has put me on this earth for a very specific purpose. Part of that purpose is to bear children and raise human beings for the future that are beneficial to society and to humanity. That's a massive job in and of itself.
Listen, right? Stop the podcast here. That's all we need to do, ladies. That's enough, okay?
Right?
That's
and enough. Just, and then so, yeah.
That's like a huge purpose.
Exactly. And so that is leadership.
Yeah.
Right? That is leadership in and of itself. You need to be an educated, well-informed woman of the world to be able to raise proper human beings in the
right.
future. Like, you're not somebody who's stuck behind, like, in your home and you're, like, confined to your house, which is unfortunately what a lot of people think about Muslim women around the world, because that's what's presented to them. We're taught that you've got to get an education. I have 3 daughters. That's what I'm preparing them for in the world. Like, I have a daughter who's preparing to go to med school. Why is she doing that? Because she wants to be a member of society or humanity that's, like, helpful and beneficial to people, right? And so that's leadership. And if you can be a leader in your home, and my husband and your husband both, they're project managers.
Yeah.
When my husband was doing his PMP certification and came home, he's like studying and he's like, yeah, there's like procurement and then there's this and then there's this. And he was like listing all the formal terms of project management. And I said, oh, so this is for you, it's a project management international certification. For me, it's just running the home. And that's literally what it is.
Yeah.
We, as a woman, if you run a home, I say be a proud homemaker, because if you monetize that into the corporate world,
yeah,
it's worth, I think I was listening to somebody who said women bring in, if they were paid for every single role that they did, their paycheck would be like $230,000 or something.
I did read that too. That is what it is. It's over 200. And I thought maybe we need to find a way to start subsidizing our women who are project managing entire homes.
Yeah, because nobody monetizes that.
They don't feel valued for it. It's not valued in our society anymore.
Yeah.
So they're sacrificing not doing that because they want to feel valued, because as humans, we want to feel valued. And I think we deserve to and need to. And there, so then it's like you're not doing a good job at anything.
Yeah.
And I love how you were so rooted in identity from such a young age that you knew what your purpose was, and then you were able to do that. So you didn't have to do all the questioning and spend all the time and energy mm-hmm. trying to figure it out. You were able to just go, no, I know my purpose. So, but I can also have a job when the time is right.
Yeah.
Well, you've always been educated. Your mom's educated. Like, that's how
yeah.
you, that's how you,
I gave up. I got a degree and I got married and I had a child right after, in a year after I got married, right? And so I went through the frustration of postpartum depression, 2 C-sections within a year and a half, and thinking to myself, and not just thinking, actually saying to my husband, I think I'm going to take my degree that I spent 4 years and wipe my kid's butt with it and throw it in the bin because that's all it's worth at the moment. However, 20 years down the line, I now can successfully say that I was part of an art show and put my art out there for my daughters to see This is also leadership, that it can come after 20 years.
Yeah, it's not time is a construct that we've made. God doesn't see us in the lens of time like we see. He sees the whole picture. We're seeing these like tiny little increments of it and thinking, well, I'm not keeping up, or I'm not, oh my goodness, I'm 30 and I haven't done this, or I'm 40 and I haven't. It's just like, remove the construct of time and realize that everything is going to come when it's meant to. And I think that is the way that you have balance.
Yes.
Like, you have balance over the course of a lifetime, not every day.
Not every day. No, I've had days where I want to rip my hair out like any other mom, and I don't want anybody to talk to me by the end of the evening. And
I just say, no, okay, now we're done talking.
Yeah.
Like, now we're done talking.
Yes.
Yeah. So they'll say our goodnight. We're done.
Yeah.
Mom,
we're done.
Is needing to be in her own brain right now. Only my brain.
Yeah. And that's fair. Like, and it's, I feel, whether you're a mom or you're not, I feel the chatter in women's brains is so loud.
Yeah.
And we are constantly fed from external forces to be stuck in that all the time. Mm-hmm. And it takes away from truly like just achieving like what we want to achieve. If you have a to-do list and you don't get everything done on that day, is it the end of the world?
No.
Like, it's, you know, and we put so much pressure on ourselves, and especially if we're moms, and then the mom guilt when you're lying down in bed and it's just like, my kid had McDonald's for lunch today or whatever.
One fail a day.
Yes.
That's how I parent. One fail a day. And it can be forgetting your kid's lunch. It can be forgetting money for the trip. It can be a big thing. It can be forgetting to pick them up.
Forgetting the hot lunch.
Oh,
my goodness.
Generally, what I do is I do all the hot lunches and then I forget. And I pack them a lunch that day.
There you go.
Yeah, that's, I like to just double lunch.
Oh, no, I've like straight up forgotten to do the hot lunch. And then I've had those looks at me at the end of the day in the car. And then I'm just like, you know what? It's okay.
Like, you will survive.
You will survive. It's okay.
Yeah, I think work-life balance, that's an interesting one.
I feel this term, work-life balance, really gets to me.
It's like, that's the problem. Can we just...
Because work is a part of your life.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It is your work or your job isn't... A, it's not your life. It's part of your life.
This is like when people say mind-body connection. I'm like, wait, is it my mind? Is it like my brain in my body?
Yeah.
Isn't my mind like a part of my body?
These are like these phrases which everybody's created. And I feel like... Women are the most spectacular beings in the world.
I agree.
Right? Mm-hmm. Whether you choose to or you don't, you have the ability to have a child, to like literally grow another human
being.
Whether you want to or not, that's completely up to you, you know, but you have that ability. And with that ability comes so many other things, right? There's so many other parts to it. And when we tap into that, when we use that brain power, and, you know, like, women can, they're not given that opportunity, maybe, but they can conquer the world.
Well, I think this is, I was so mad at the supper table last night. I get so triggered that I just like shut down. I shut down, and I don't shut down a lot, but this will shut me down. Like, the Barbie movie will shut me down, anything like that. So we're talking about, I said, you know, when it used to be, I don't know if it still is, but when men would get pregnant, like, their wife would get pregnant, they would get a raise. Mm-hmm. You know what women do? They get fired or demoted.
Yep.
And they said, well, that's because, you know, my family was like, well, that's because, you know, they're missing work or they're not. I'm like, you think that having a baby makes you a worse employee? You are more qualified after a year of mat leave than any of those people who have not had a child. Yeah. You know how to structure your time. You're more efficient. You're more effective.
You're keeping a human being alive.
You have this emotional regulation. Like, you have learned so many skills that are so beneficial to the workforce and to corporate. They should be giving you a raise the moment they find out you're pregnant.
Yeah.
And being like, oh my, we're keeping your spot for when you get back.
Yeah.
I can't wait for you to get back. You're going to be amazing. Please come back.
And it bugs me too when women, I mean, I was in the situation when I was in the UAE, I was teaching. And in the UAE, you have to, like, whoever's the primary work visa sponsor is the person who can sponsor their spouse then.
Okay.
And so that was me, because Imran came to the UAE after I did. And so I was working as a teacher. And I had a female, like, principal who made all the decisions, like, in our school, like, for, it was a private school. So she decided all the pay and everything. I got paid less than my male counterparts who were sponsoring their families, even though I was doing the same thing. I was the primary breadwinner. She's just like, yeah, but you're a woman. And that, like, and it blew my mind that another woman was saying this to me. I was just like, yes, but I am also sponsoring a spouse, my children. I'm the only person earning at the moment. Why am I earning less than my male counterparts? And she literally, genuinely did not get it.
No, because this has not, no one's ever asked her this before.
Yeah.
And she has never thought about it.
Yeah.
And it was programmed in that this is just not the way it's done.
Yeah.
And how, that's why I got frustrated at the table, because it was like, it was just so normal to think that way. And I, you know, I so struggle with that. I'm always pushing the envelope. I'm like, but can we just open our minds and pretend all these constructs don't exist and just talk, like, on a really human level?
Yeah. And how brilliant would it be now, I feel, if women business owners who have employees, who have female employees, who are about to go on mat leave or whatever, think that way.
Well, and they certainly would.
And they change that narrative and they go, you know what? I know what you're about to go through. I mean, imagine having, and I can definitely imagine this because I've been through this, but 7 layers of your body cut through to give birth to a child. I'm sorry if I'm getting graphic here, but to give birth to a human being, abdominal surgery, like, this is major abdominal surgery.
Yeah.
Like, and you're told to get up the next morning after a C-section and take care of a human being. Like, you're literally taking care of a child,
like keeping
them alive.
I think that,
and so,
well, I would do it. Okay, I'm just putting myself in this position. The Well has grown exponentially, and we now have quite a great team. Someone's pregnant. Oh, they're pregnant. They tell me. You know what I would say? I'm so excited for you. You are number one. And I would do, this is how I am. You're my number one priority right now. Like, your health and body is everything. I hope you'll come back after, because you are going to be even it's going to be such an asset to us to have someone who is a mother, who understands the sacrifice, the self-care needed, all of the things that you will learn. This is going to be the most growth and education you're ever going to have in your life, is this, having this baby. I'm so proud of you and excited. Please come back. And if you don't, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, that's how I would, not fearful about money and all these measurements.
Like, when did it become not okay to be a human being who has a child? Like, this is what I find so strange.
I would like to know when, because I think it was okay. I think it was celebrated. I think it was way back. I think it was amazing and celebrated and treasured.
Till people decided that it served their purpose a lot more to have two people in the household working and paying taxes. That's been my understanding. It's
inefficient.
Because I come from a country, in the UAE especially, yes, they have a lot of oil wealth and all of that, but taxes are not a thing there. Income tax is not a thing, right? You take home what you take home.
And you
what you
put
are.
Aside for, like,
care
or whatever, dentist, whatever you need to do.
Yeah. And so it's, like, it's so different from over here where, like, you feel very, I don't know, I feel very... I don't want to say the word controlled. I don't want that to, like,
okay.
I feel like I'm very,
like, do you feel like some of your, like, autonomy is, like, taken away from you? Like, your ability to choose for yourself?
Yeah.
How you want to spend your money?
Like, back home, when I was expecting my first daughter in Pakistan, Imran and I were both working. We were both earning an equal amount of, like, the exact same paycheck. And as soon as I conceived, and this was my choice, but Imran said to me, he's just like, I would really love it if you stayed home and just took care of yourself, because taking care of you is my responsibility as a man of the house.
Well, truthfully, I love my husband taking care of, like, I'm sorry, I'm not the kind of a woman who won't have, I love when people, you want to take care of me, I'll let anybody take care of me.
I like having my money. I'm not saying I don't, but in the same token, if I don't have to worry about having to go to work every day.
Yeah, sure, take some time off.
That would be brilliant.
Yeah.
Right? And I don't have that choice over here, I feel. Like, I feel like this is going to be out soon on the podcast.
In a few weeks, month, maybe.
Yeah. So I am currently expecting another baby. And
what?
Like, you didn't know that, Tammy, at all. But I feel like now I don't have that choice. Like, I still need to keep working till I go into labor. Like, if I was in Pakistan, I would easily, or in the UAE, I would easily be able to just quit my job and stay home and just grow a child.
Come on.
But I can over here. I feel like that.
Because so much is taken from, like, even your paycheck. Like, you can't save what you...
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I guess I don't know the whole... Like, I'm not into politics and into that. I don't know a lot of information about where exactly the money goes. But it is interesting if you look at the history of taxes.
Yeah.
And when income tax first started, which was not that long ago, and what the intention was for it, and that it wasn't supposed to be permanent.
Yeah.
It is just interesting to look back on the history of it and see kind of why and, like... Are we taking, like, if we're using this to take care of our entire city, are we actually taking care of people with the money responsibly in the way that's actually helping them?
Yeah.
I don't know. I would say maybe not in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So I think some ways it's good, some ways it's difficult. The system is flawed.
But that's human beings.
Let's not end on that.
Yeah.
Let's just, Well, this is what I want. This is what I'm going to talk to you about, too, because this, you've had a strong voice in this over the years. Because I know we're already an hour and we could talk for hours more. So I would really like to end with, can you share a little bit about, because you talk about the quote that I always often quote of you every Mother's Day is, we're all mothers to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning it is nothing to do with if you have birthed a kid out of your vagina or had a C-section. Like, it's nothing to do with being pregnant. I want to hear your thoughts a bit more on what does that look like?
I feel, okay, so the term mother is so many things. It's about somebody who nurtures another person, who teaches another person, supports another person. And as women, we have that capacity built in automatically. Like, it's just part of our genetic makeup and the capacity is so, so vast for us, right? To be able to do that. We can open our arms up and accept so many people into our lives as women. That's what I mean. And I feel now more than ever, especially women like us who are in their 40s or even in their 30s, the kind of, like, what we can teach to anybody in our circle, whether they're 5 years old as a girl or they're, you know, 25, is so much, like, there's so much that we can teach them, guide them on. Just even the way that we carry ourselves is a lesson to other people. Yeah. And that's what I mean by that. It's like we're all mothers to the coming generations, because whatever we're putting out there, even if we don't have any other women in our lives, but whatever we're putting out there, like, think about the women that you look up to, whether it's, I don't know, Michelle Obama or Mother Teresa or whoever, like Queen Elizabeth. I don't know. Like, I'm just like taking some names here, but. If you look at those women, like, what is their legacy other than just, like, they're not all mothers, right? But they are, like, what are the qualities that you look up to in other women?
Yeah.
That you would want women to look up to in you?
Yeah. And that's, to me, that's what that leadership component is, too, because I think we teach, like, we really foster feminine leadership at The Well. Mm-hmm. And we used to talk more about, like, entrepreneurship and creativity, and really it's, like, feminine leadership. And that's not meaning you're top in a company. It actually, you don't need a job.
No.
Leadership is how you present yourself and what people see. You're leading those people.
I see my 10-year-old daughter as a leader.
Yeah.
Right? She comes home from school and she has a voice. She has an opinion about things at home. She will be the first one in her class to welcome a new kid. Like, that's leadership,
yeah.
right? So it doesn't have to be, like, she doesn't have a job or corporate yeah. job anywhere. Like, she
has nothing to do with status, or it's actually yeah. anyone, everyone. I actually believe everyone is a leader
yeah.
because there's always someone who is watching you and seeing how you conduct yourself and learning from you.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like having that responsibility within yourself that actually the way that I behave does matter. It does impact other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really fascinating how much power our words and our actions really have
yeah.
in impacting people we don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know who's going to listen to all of this.
Yeah.
And, you know,
people are downloading these from like Europe and the States. I'm like, who are you?
Interesting.
Who are yeah. you?
And they might, I mean, and a lot of them, for example, they may not agree with what I had to say,
yeah.
which is fine, you know, but it's, again, it's, I feel we are not internalizing enough. We're not internalizing and understanding our own powers.
Like reflecting, understanding, becoming aware
yeah.
of the impact we have.
Of the impact yeah. that we have or that we can have.
Yeah. I love that. I love that. I think it's so important to know how important you are.
Yeah.
Like how important, everyone listening to this, you are so important. It does matter. You matter. Like when you make choices or you use your voice or you open the door or you help someone
yeah.
in need, like it impacts people. It changes people's lives. We have so much power to change things and to
yeah, it's just like smiling at somebody yeah. is like even something yeah. as small as that.
Yeah.
I just recently met a friend of mine at the mosque, and she went through something very difficult in the last couple of months. And we were talking about it. I mean, health-wise, she went through a really bad health scare and stuff. And she said to me, she said, out of all the people that I know at this mosque, and it's over about 1,000 people almost, and she's just like, you were the only person who texted me. And I texted her out of the blue just one day because I hadn't seen her for a while. And I just texted her and I was just like, you know, I really miss you. And where are you? And let's catch up. And just that was all I said to her. And the impact she said that it had, because she read that text at a time when she was mentally and physically going through something so traumatic. And so it's things like that, like really think about it, like the intentionality behind every text that you send, every person that you talk to in a day, or, you know,
it really matters. And I think that's where, for me, when the spirit moves me, whether it's my gut, my intuition, Holy Spirit, God, it's like I listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when I haven't listened, I notice.
Yeah.
Why didn't I knew,
mm-hmm.
you know, so really like getting in touch with that internal voice,
yeah,
which for me is God and it Mother Earth, universe,
yeah.
whatever that is for you, but that you, it's there. The spiritual voice is there. Listen to it and believe it.
Yeah.
And then take action on that and
yeah.
you will see huge benefits and rewards.
Yeah. And that's the hard work. And that's, I feel like that's the work that we need to do. Which is so hard because then you need to switch off social media. You need to switch off your phone. You need to, you know what I mean? Get quiet. And that's what people around us and the world around us doesn't want us to.
Yeah.
They want us to be switched on all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and that's the really hard part.
And I feel like, yeah, how, so it would be interesting to just, and then we really will close.
Yeah.
But for regulation, I had a friend messaging me this morning and I said, you need to get regulated. Like
mm-hmm.
you're out of regulation and you matter. So I said, go for a walk.
Yeah.
Do some body movement. Take a bath. Have tea. Just put your phone down.
Yeah.
Find a quiet space. Get rid of everybody else. They'll be fine. And take care of yourself.
And it can be as little as 20 minutes in a day.
Meditate just 2 minutes. It's huge.
That's all it takes.
Huge.
Yeah.
I think that's why smokers are so successful in that, because they leave every hour for 10 minutes and they take a break. So I think I'm just going to start taking a non-smoking break.
Yeah.
For 10 minutes every hour.
Yeah.
It's accepted if you're a smoker. So I feel like it should be accepted.
And what are they doing?
A non-smoker.
Yes, it's toxic, but they're doing deep breathing.
And they're talking to their friends.
Yeah.
Problem solved.
Problem solved.
World problem solved. Don't smoke, but do everything else
besides
inhaling.
Do deep breathing.
Okay.